I call to order the meeting of the Higher Education and Career Business Policy and Finance Committee. And although it doesn't look like it, we do have a quorum. So at this point, I'd like to also have someone make a motion to approve the minutes from March the 7th. Representative Jessup.
Chair Norris, I make a motion that we approve the minutes from March 7th.
All right, any changes, corrections, questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. We have two bills today, and we encourage a lot of questions today because we're going to have some time. First bill up is House File 1775, and I move that bill will then be laid over for possible inclusion. And this bill is mine. I'm going to sit here if that's okay. It's a fairly straightforward legislative need here. Current law prohibits the Office of Higher Education from providing registration, degree approval, or name approval to a private degree-granting post-secondary institution if there is a criminal, civil, or administrative adjudication, a fraud, or misrepresentation against the school. House File 1775 removes that prohibition and instead gives the Office of Higher Education the discretion to revoke or deny any application for registration, degree approval, or name approval if the school received an adjudication of fraud or misrepresentation. The bill also permits the commissioner to revoke degree approval for a particular academic program rather than the school if the adjudication of fraud or misrepresentation was related to a particular academic program. So that, in a nutshell, is what this legislation will do. And we do have one testifier to explain it further, perhaps. Jeannie Herman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Nornes and committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Jeannie Herman. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Globe University and Minnesota School of Business. I also have Mindy Meyer with us, who is a Director of Community Engagement and Charitable Giving and is also a member of the Meyer family, who own and operate our schools, and until recently were serving over 2,500 students and employed over 500 Minnesotans. We are here today to express our support of House File 1775 as authored by Chair Nornes and Representative Albright. The schools have worked closely with our regulators and believe that the Minnesota Office of Higher Education has always had the discretion and ability to work with its regulated institutions to reach resolutions that make sense for students, the schools, and the state. And we believe the language in House File 1775 further clarifies this and confirms the intent of the legislature. This clarifying language will allow the Minnesota Office of Higher Education to have confidence that it can work with schools and students in common sense ways that will protect students and Minnesota citizens in the unfortunate event of a court finding of misrepresentation of fraud. The clarifying language gives the Minnesota Office of Higher Education the ability to protect students immediately impacted by that adjudication, as well as to protect the state against unqualified institutions seeking approval to operate in the state. But as importantly, the clarifying language gives the office clear discretion to work with the schools that have a long history of serving the state to continue to have the authority to confer degrees so that those schools can continue to serve the essential function of providing education to Minnesota citizens that was always the intent of the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. And someone has joined you. Would you also want to identify who you are and then proceed?
I'm Mindy Meyer. I am part of the ownership of the schools and here to also support Jeannie and the schools and the bill and the language in the bill. And thank you for putting it forward.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Herman and Ms. Meyer, can you tell us how long your school has been around?
Yes. Thank you, Representative Christensen, Chair Nornes. Our schools have been operating for 140 years. Minnesota School of Business was founded in 1877, and Globe College was founded in 1885.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. It's quite a long history. Could you tell us how many employees lost their jobs?
I can tell you, Representative Christensen, Chair Nornes, that in 2013 we had over 1,200 employees that worked here in Minnesota, supporting both the campuses here in Minnesota as well as our campuses in Wisconsin, Idaho, and Utah. Just prior to the adjudication, there was about 500 Minnesota employees, and we are less than 70 employees remaining.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, you know, one last question. When this happened, how many students were displaced?
Ms. Herman?
Chair Norris, Representative Christensen, we had 2,500 students who were enrolled at the time of the decision, and we are currently still teaching out some students. Unfortunately, the action of the revocation created other catastrophic events, which included the U.S. Department of Education taking action in relation to Title IV federal funding. And so as that happened, it became very difficult for most students to continue. We work diligently and continue to work to find pathways for students, and have been successful in many instances, and have been very proud of other members of the higher education community in the state who have stepped up to help students and work with them on creating pathways for graduation. And as I mentioned, you know, we're a little under 100 students now that are continuing in our Minnesota campuses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Herman, can you back up, I guess, and tell us a little bit about the criminal justice program that seemed to be kind of the center of the reason for this legislation?
I can. Thank you, Chair Nornes. The criminal justice program started somewhere in mid-2000 and was designed to help graduates who would be interested in correction, security, victim advocacy. At that point, we did seek consideration from the Minnesota Pulse Board because currently, and in that case, at that time, there was a prohibition written into the rules in the Pulse Board that prohibited students who graduated from a school accredited by a national accrediting body to be eligible to move forward with post and skills training. We moved forward with the program because we had many employers in the state who suggested that there was many positions that needed to be filled that were separate from law enforcement. And over the course of the years, we continued to review that program. At one point, our provost created quite a summit of really high-ranking officials, including the former Commission of Corrections, to determine, you know, is this a viable program? Is there a need for this program outside of law enforcement? And we're rest assured that indeed there were significant positions and a significant need. And so while we went back to the Pulse Board a few different times for reconsideration, unfortunately that rule has not changed.
Okay, thank you. Prior to this, can you tell us how your working relationship has been with the Office of Higher Education?
Thank you, Chair Nornes. Yes, I think that our relationship has been a strong one. I've been with the schools for 25 years, so I have worked with different directors and different commissioners over the course of the years, and the relationship has always been a very collaborative relationship. You know, certainly there are issues that come to the attention of the office, whether it's through a student complaint or otherwise, and prior to this, we have always been able to very effectively work on an appropriate resolution that worked well for the student.
All right. Any other members' questions? Person Fryer.
Thank you, Chair Nornes. I've been working this out because there's double negatives and just understanding the bill. So I'm wondering if the legislature also needs to give guidance on when a may revoke should be used. Because right now it's saying it's clear that the office shall not provide the registration or degree or name approved, shall not do it if and the conditions say that if there's fraud or misrepresentation. So right now it's clear that if fraud or misrepresentation is happening, then it should, you know, they're told right away to revoke the registration. But now it says may revoke, and it's so it's left up to the discretion of the office. And so is that enough intent to say when they should do it and when they shouldn't do it? Is it, because it seems like it's just up to the commissioner to make the call, and that we're not giving any other guidance on when to do it or not to do it. So is there some kind of clarity and when this would be used and when it would not be used? Or when it would be revoked and when it would not be revoked.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I wish I were more articulate on this.
Well, that's fine. I know in this case it actually was impacted by the Attorney General, correct?
Correct, Chair Norton.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've got a clarification on that. I think the intent is to actually have some discretion for a decision to be made that's based on what's best for everybody, including the students. I think this committee would agree the students are what we all focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's my answer. I guess we would hope that would be mm-hmm. taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we hear it in committee and as people try to decipher what the intent of the legislation is, that considerations such as the impact on the students should be a part of that decision.
And maybe we can clarify that a little more as we move forward. Yeah.
Okay.
I know the Senate has had, have they had a hearing on this? I guess they have not. But mm-hmm. as we go forward, maybe we can try and do that.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Norris.
Any other questions? If not, we thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Before we move on to another bill, we have one other testifier, at least one other, maybe, or several. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Nikki Oliver. I'm the legislative liaison for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, and here with me is Betsy Talbot, the manager for licensing and registration. And our office agrees that some modification to 136.585 may be appropriate. We do think the current language in the bill needs a few adjustments to really encapsulate the intent for consumer protection. So we have been talking to some of the staff, and we're willing to work with you, Chair Nornes, on fixing that language and kind of addressing some of Representative Pryor's concerns about more guidance as it pertains to the language. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, appreciate you being willing to do that for us, and we want to get it right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anyone else care to speak on behalf or opposed to this? If not, then I will renew House File 1775. Will be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, members, we have another bill. Appreciate your attention again. House File 2069. This time we're dealing with pilots and trying to train more pilots. Some of you may have been on this committee a year or two ago when we had a similar piece of legislation, came to us, and it's addressing the same issue, and that is to find more folks willing to become pilots. And there is a crisis, just like in other areas, like teaching and other. It's becoming a problem. And when you fly, you want to be sure you have a good pilot. That's pretty fundamental, I guess. So what we're doing with this legislation, again, I move House File 1775 to be laid over, but it provides registration, degree approval, or name approval to a private degree-granting post-secondary institution. Well, Am I reading the right one? I'm reading the wrong bill. Sorry about that. I think we just did that one. I got it here. There we are. Forget what you just heard. Okay, House File 2069. And this time we're going to deal with education, but it's PIAS, as I said before, but you said the wrong script. So House File 2069 establishes a loan forgiveness program to the Office of Higher Education for aircraft technicians and pilots who complete a post-secondary degree in Minnesota. The awards range from $1,500 to $5,000, according to this, and the difference in the amount is depending on the residency, and I'm going to make a small oral amendment here. Okay. In the bill, just give me a minute to find my own. Okay. Okay. Before we offer the amendment, Sean Williams, you want to explain? I haven't quite explained it yet, so you go ahead and you do it for me.
Mr. Chair and committee members, under the bill as introduced, there's language that indicates that a pilot who is a non-resident of Minnesota may receive loan forgiveness through the program. My understanding of Chair Nordis' intent here is to remove the language related to a non-resident receiving the loan forgiveness through the program. So in order to accomplish that, the amendment would be page 2, line 16, after the word less, semicolon, insert and. Page 2, delete lines 17 and 18. Page 2, line 19, delete 3 in parentheses and insert 2 in parentheses. And page 2, line 20, delete the semicolon and insert a period. And then page 2, delete lines 21 and 22.
Anyone have questions or needing that repeated? Okay. The original idea, I guess, was to allow some forgiveness for those that have to go to a different state to find employment after being trained, because there is a shortage everywhere. And I guess the general feeling is that we want to keep it a Minnesota program if there's a benefit that we're going to pay for. So that's the reason for the amendment. I would like to then offer the amendment as an oral amendment. Any questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment then is adopted. Okay, back to the bill itself. I believe we have a testifier, perhaps, to come down at this time. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Norris. My name is Gordon Huff. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Business Aviation Association. Thank you for letting me talk about this bill briefly. As you've heard, there is a shortage of pilots and airframe and power plant technicians. Now, we have three schools in Minnesota. Mankato, of course, is the largest school, and they train professional pilots, and they graduate roughly between 42 and 48 pilots annually, so we say the number is 45. We have a two-year school up at Lake Superior. They graduate approximately 20 pilots annually, and they also train A&P students, and they are graduating, I think, something in the vicinity of 12. And then at Thief River Falls, you have our largest A&P program, or airframe and power plant technician program, and they graduate about 30 students per year. And there is a shortage, and there are several documents. I give you one example that happened at Thief River Falls. They had Great Lakes providing service, and the pilot and co-pilot in that aircraft, because it's over 10 seats in the aircraft, have to have an airline transport pilot rating in both the left and the right seats. So the pilot and co-pilot both have to be air transport pilots. They were having trouble finding pilots. They stopped service for 8 months back in 2014. They resumed service until 2016, and they canceled 30% of their flights, and most of those were due to pilot shortage. So the city now has moved on to a new carrier. It's called Boutique. They're out of California. They fly Pilatus PC-12 aircraft. They're a single-engine aircraft, and you're operating under 8 seats, and so their co-pilot now does not have to be the air transport rated pilot, which requires that you have 1,500 hours of flying time. And they have now upped their service to three times a day, and they are flying almost full on each trip, according to the airport manager.
And that's the only airline serving that community now, right?
That is the only airline.
They have had, if I can just add a little bit here, they've had service there for many, many years.
That is correct.
With Northwest or whoever. So
yeah.
And it's critical to that community because of their industry up that way.
Very true. And that's true of International Falls and Duluth, Rochester, Bemidji, and Hibbing, I believe, also have what we call regional air service. And five of those are what we call essential air service, which means they get some special aid from the federal government to help provide air service. But the pilot is the big issue, and then, of course, people to fix the aircraft and maintain them, the airframe and power plant. It's an expensive career to go into. Checking with Mankato, Tom Peters, the director there, estimates that most of those students will have at least $100,000 in cost to graduate with tuition and the flying part of it as a professional pilot. And they typically will start as a flight instructor, probably making $20,000 to $22,000 a year, and then they will probably go on and fly for a regional carrier, and they'll make something in the vicinity of $30,000 to $35,000 a year. I know we hear the stories about the big captains on the international flights making a couple of $100,000, but that's probably 20 years into your career. So it is expensive to get started, and young people are choosing not to spend that kind of money to get into the program. The airframe and power plant student is a little bit less. It's a two-year program at Thief River. They estimate it's about $13,000 a year in tuition, and then they spend about $3,500 for tools. And at Lake Superior, their program is a little bit more expensive. I think they were at $19,000 for tuition, but they spend $1,500 on tools during their time there. So pretty close in cost, just how they, maybe the students buy, maybe Lake Superior provides some tools for them or something, and they buy all their tools at Northern. I'd have to check into that in more detail to get that exact answer.
What's the earning potential then for that that degree?
That degree, I would say that, you know, after you, well, I better not say. I don't have a good figure on that, so I'm not going to venture. But
I'm guessing it's higher than a pilot.
To start with, it probably would be higher than a pilot, yes. But certainly they're not going to make the same amount of money at the end of their career. I can get that information and get back to the committee with that.
That's fine. Okay, any questions of our testifier? It is a crisis.
It is a growing crisis. There is no doubt about it. They had a regional meeting for regional carriers earlier, I think it was last year, at MSP, and Fargo, North Dakota was there. There were people from Kentucky there looking to solve this issue, primarily for pilots, but the airframe and power plant is right behind that as far as the need in the industry.
Do these schools, as far as you know, have, is there enrollment kind of max? I mean, can they take more students? I mean, what is the capacity that they might have?
I suppose if there were more students, you would think that they would be able to probably find some more instructors to teach. So I would say the capacity, I would assume, could probably grow. But I can't answer that definitively.
All right. Okay, again, any questions of members? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Nornis. So just to make sure that I'm understanding, the problem, it sounds like the problem is that it's expensive to train pilots, and they incur a lot of debt to get the training, and then their career doesn't compensate them for the cost of the training that they need to go through. Is that fair to say?
Chair Nornis, Representative Pryor, most students will graduate in the pilot training program, they'll graduate with 200 to 250 hours, probably closer to the 200 hours. To get an air transport rating, you have to have 1,500 hours. And so flying at a minimum, once you get into a twin-engine aircraft, is probably a couple hundred dollars an hour. So you can imagine the cost goes up. And then if you have the instructor, that's $50 an hour probably too. So after you graduate from school, how do you bill these other 1,200 to 1,300 hours? I should mention one thing, if I may continue. If you're an accredited FAA program, which they all are, you only have to have 1,200 hours to get an ATP rating. So there is an advantage there. But you're still trying to find a way to make a living and generate another 1,000 hours of flying before you become an ATP pilot.
A follow-up?
Does the loan forgiveness then address these additional training that they need when they have to go up with another pilot, when they have to do all of the hours in the air? And would the loan, is that the student loan part of it, or is that,
no,
how would that be paid? Okay.
No, the student loan, if the student is coming out with between $80,000 and $100,000 of loans, let's use that as an example, then for 5 years, that student could qualify for $5,000 a year per year for the pilot program, so a total of $25,000 for that student. So it by no means will erase the loan, but it will help them, especially in those first few years when the pay is so low. It's frustrating. We have a number of airport managers who started out to be pilots, and reality set in on how much it was going to cost to get that degree, and they decided to be airport managers instead of pilots.
And for the technician, that's 3,000 max, right?
Correct, 3,000, yeah. Right.
Okay. Yes, Representative.
This is a question for the chair, probably. And just so far as we've considered these different loan forgiveness programs and the effort to build our workforce is fundamentally what we're trying to do. And I see in the bill we want folks to be resident of Minnesota, but I'm wondering then if they get the loan, it's almost like the Teach for America model. Can we say they have to stay and work here while they're getting that loan for a certain period of time so that we're getting some payback on the state money? Just
right.
Kind of a thought.
Yeah, and that's the amendment we were talking
that's
about.
That's you, okay.
As it's always been, if they stay in Minnesota, they get the maximum of pay. The original bill was written so if they move to a different state, they get half of the benefit.
Okay.
But apparently, there's a strong feeling that they ought to stay in Minnesota and be a Minnesotan if we're going to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I guess I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And maybe just a thought for committee members, the other bills that we've talked about for loan forgiveness, that may be something that we add in, you know, as a general kind of philosophy, that if we're going to give loan forgiveness, let's keep those workers in Minnesota and have that be a requirement at least for a certain time period. Thank you.
Okay, any final comment? We have plenty of time, so.
Less is better sometimes.
Are you a pilot, by the way?
I have a private pilot certificate, but I operations have limited my flying.
Okay. All right. Something I've always wanted to do. I got other limitations. Fear of heights is one of them. So thank you for your testimony. House File 2069 will be laid over for possible inclusion. As amended, by the way. Thank you. Okay. Now we'll open up for just general discussion. Hearing none.